This is PS You're Wrong, the podcast where we talk trash about the things people love to hate and hate to love. And we're your hosts, Shelby and Matt.
It's alive. That's a
did you watch the right Frankenstein? Did you watch the right version? I'm worried.
I did, but this is going to be one of those fun episodes where, when did I see this movie? 2 months ago. How well do I remember it?
Matthew.
I reread the plot synopsis. Mm. And then I also read an article that was like differences between this version of the movie.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah.
Because I was also like, when did I read Frankenstein, the novel, last? At least 10 years ago.
I mean, I should hope at least 10. That'd be crazy to reread this.
I read it every year for Christmas.
Yeah.
I just love Frankenstein so much.
Oh, no. Unfortunately, I did not have to reacquaint myself with the plot line of Frankenstein. I feel like, I don't know. I don't know if this is the case across colleges nationally, but I feel like Frankenstein was like the only novel by a woman that the English course knew at BYU, and so I had to read this so often. I read it in high school, and then I read it at least twice in college, and then of course I had my accursed Frankenstein senior thesis class, which was about Frankenstein and film. So we did a lot of I covered a lot of Frankenstein ground. A lot. And I famously do not like Frankenstein. So
famously, as in that we learned this last week.
Well, famous to you from last week, but anyone who went to college with me had to hear me talk about how much I hated Frankenstein because I always had to read Frankenstein. But
I always thought you loved Frankenstein because you took this class on it in college. And I was she must have adored this book because I did my senior thesis on Invisible Man by Ralph Ellison, a book you that I don't believe has been turned into a movie and a book which I absolutely adore. So, but Frankenstein, I do think fits a... Yeah, it's like the perfect book to assign. I think I read it in high school and then again in college.
Yeah.
Because it's not very long. It's written by a woman, but in an era where there wasn't, you know, that many female writers, at least canon, like, who are in
limited,
the canon.
Yes,
the
yes.
canon is limited. And then also, you know, it's like she's related to a famous male writer. So that's exciting.
So
and
many.
Then also,
well, actually, don't you think Percy actually wrote this? It's possible Percy actually wrote this. So, you know, Percy probably wrote this. That was
also,
so much of the discourse.
Also, then the book doesn't really have any female characters for the most part. So another reason why college
well,
short classes
they're
are
viciously
like,
murdered and cast aside.
Well,
yes, in a statement about society and how we treat othered people who don't fit into standards.
So yes, but this movie it's directed by, this is the like what 112th version of Frankenstein. There's so many different versions. This is another staple, sort of like Dracula, that just keeps getting brought up over and over and over and over again. And with, you know, lots of different takes, like obviously we saw Nosferatu last year. There's cartoon versions of Frankenstein. There's old silent film versions of Frankenstein.
I mean, Nosferatu is Dracula.
No. But that's what I mean.
We get a lot of Dracula, we get a lot of Frankenstein.
We're getting lots of both of them. I'm sure there'll be another Dracula movie within the next 5 years. Maggie Gyllenhaal is working on a Bride of Frankenstein movie that I guess will come out. I thought it was supposed to come out this year, but I guess it'll probably come out next year because I haven't heard anything about it.
I think it's like Christmas, isn't it? I think it has a big release planned.
Bride of Frankenstein. The Bride.
It's just called The Bride.
No, it is scheduled to come out on March 6th.
Oh,
so.
Ouch.
It got pushed back, so maybe it's not good. Unclear. Yeah. But it has Jesse Buckley in it, I guess, is the main character.
And Christian Bale.
Lots of people. Mm-hmm. Jake Gyllenhaal, Penelope Cruz. Oh, Julianne Hough is in it. That should be exciting.
Stacked cast.
Yeah, but this is directed by Guillermo del Toro, who is a very famous, prominent director. He won the Oscar for The Shape of Water, but he's done a lot of sort of monster gothic related movies.
And this Nightmare has been Alley, his Pinocchio. Dream, his albatross.
Yes.
He's been talking about this for 20 years, and he's just really been excited about Frankenstein, which he says the novel was like his Bible growing up. Which, you know, okay, I support anyone Toby not obsessed quibbles. With the actual Bible, but Frankenstein, is that it? But no, he is excited about this. And I'm like wishy-washy on his stuff. I'm like, yeah, I like some. I don't like all of it. It's not always a, it's not a selling point for me always that he directed a thing. And so the Frankenstein, I was like, you know what? It makes sense. Like stylistically, you know, it exists. It's a connection that doesn't confuse me. I wasn't necessarily looking forward to it. And you absolutely hated this film for some reason. Unclear. Because I say that because you saw it pretty early, didn't yes. really talk about it, didn't make an impact. But then when the movie came out, I was expecting like a mid movie. But this has performed very well critically and box office. I mean, it's streaming now, so a little easier to get word of mouth excitement, but yeah, everyone likes this, so I'm curious how your experience happened. Matt, always want to understand.
So this premiered at the Venice Film Festival and I think got like fine reviews. And mm-hmm. then it played at Toronto where I saw it. Mm. And the general consensus, at least of the people who I know who saw it at Toronto, was that it was not that good. Okay. Like that, and for lots of different reasons that we can get into. But I think, you know, sort of generally the top complaints were that it's A, long. B, looks kind of ugly. Like, it's not, it looks like sort of Disney-esque.
Cut to Jacob and Lordy thirst traps as the Frankenstein monster.
Well, yeah. I mean, Jacob and Lordy, you know, whatever. But, like, it's, I don't know, it looks a little, like, cartoonish kind of in some points. Like, there's this wolf sequence where, like, the wolves look terrible. Like, I just don't think it quite, like, visually was what people were expecting it to be. And then third, it sort of changes the novel and sort of the takeaways of the novel in weird ways that
interesting. I don't interesting know, like, you should say that knowing you had to review the what happened in the novel. Well, for this
some of it, but there were the thing is that there were key parts of the novel that in my mind were the things that stood out that then were not in the movie. And I was like, huh, okay, well, I remember that scene vividly because that was like the biggest scene in the book for me, and yet it was nowhere to be found in the film. So I was like, interesting that they would take that out. Again, this was sort of like, I had multiple conversations with people because the, you know, we were kind of like, okay, well, Frankenstein's not in the Oscar race. Like, anyways, moving on to whatever the next thing is. Yeah. And then I think as it played more regional festivals and more people saw it, I don't know if it was that thing where like the expectations were low and so they liked it more coming in or what. But yeah, the people have been loving it. The word of mouth has been growing. It has a lot of buzz. Now it feels like a movie that definitely is in the Oscar race in a lot of different categories. So I don't know if it was just like we were all in sort of a bad mood in Toronto and that was the vibe, or if like this movie appeals to like certain demographics but not necessarily others. Like I don't really know what the issue is, but I did not like this movie. I don't, Guillermo del Toro is not my favorite director. Like I liked The Shape of Water. I did not like Nightmare Alley. I thought the animated Pinocchio was like a very whatever movie. So I don't know. This movie really did nothing for me. And I felt like, especially coming after Nosferatu last year, which I thought did a lot of interesting things with Dracula and looked absolutely incredible, even if it was a little bit long at points, that this was just like such a flop in comparison. They're not made by the same person or whatever, but I was just like, okay, I've seen the blueprint of how we kind of like redo one of these like famous texts, these horror films, with all of the technology that we have today. And whatever this is that I'm watching in Frankenstein is not what I was looking for. So I did not like this. We can get into the more of the detailed reasons why as we go. But did you like this movie?
Yeah, I mean, Frankenstein. Yeah, it's tough. It's a tough sell for me. But I was surprised by how much I enjoyed this movie. I'm like,
you never tell with Shelby. You never can.
I mean, I didn't know either, but I think what it comes down to is I've had to sit with this text a lot. And I've also had a dad who's like obsessed with like the cartoonish villainy, whatever horror of the black and white era. So I've seen a lot of the Frankenstein adaptations as well, which are usually more, I mean, you have campy, you have short films, like you have your classic green monster who just grunts and does nothing. And so it's always been like fascinating how Frankenstein is adapted and viewed. I, for one, found the novel nauseatingly stuck in this male perspective, and Frankenstein was such a loser that I was just like, ugh, any movie about it was annoying. Any review of it, of like trying to like suss out his motivation and flaws and whatever, hated it. This movie, I think, actually captured a lot of the heart of the novel in a way that made me appreciate the novel again, the original text, in a way I have not done since high school. And I found his love of the text like very obvious in how he chose to adapt it and kind of the changes made, which I don't know if it was always successful. Like, I think the Mia Goth character is especially the one that's sort of cited and talked about as either as a very divisive, like it was either great as is or it was worse than the book, because that's where the main difference comes, is like, yeah, like this book really highlighted everything I found so annoying about Frankenstein, and it did it in a way that like validated my annoyances. So I was like, oh, Guillermo like gets it. Like, yes, this is right. Even though he loves the book, and that comes through. I'm not saying it's like, wow, I like this because it's a bad adaptation. It was like, I felt like it captured something really interesting about the original novel. And while it might have like shifted perspective on maybe the main issues of the text, you know, because Mary Shelley was writing from a very specific turn of the century, there was a lot of issues of patriarchy and racism in her text, whereas this is much more concerned with the parental dynamic and the fatherhood dynamic. And so there's definitely a shift, but there's still like the same essence. And I found this movie actually like really beautiful. Like, it is more, it's like less authentic, maybe like less gritty than something like Nosferatu, but I think it exists in this sort of like surrealist gothic place where it's like, you are making a monster movie, like of course you're gonna have a phallic castle in the hills of the middle of nowhere overlooking snowy banks in a frozen sunrise. Like, it was like there's an element to it that's very, you know, Pan's Labyrinth. Like, it's like Willow. Like, it just exists in a gothic gothic design aesthetic that I think made sense. And I do not think the graphics were any worse. I do not think the costumes were any worse. I do not think Mia Goth bleaching her eyebrows was really that like much worse than how this story has been bastardized through various iterations. Like, I feel like it made sense as an entity.
I wasn't comparing it to other Frankenstein versions because like I really haven't seen that many.
For sure.
But it was giving Disney live animated,
absolutely
like
not
live action.
Absolutely, rewatch Aladdin and then tell me that with your full chest. Like,
I
design of this, even just the aesthetics of the castle, are more expensive than what was put into freaking Snow White or
Little Mermaid. Snow White the entire time I was watching this.
You can't be taken seriously. Computer
generated objects looked so bad. It was giving Marvel, like, it was not giving expensive.
What computer generated objects? Like, what are we talking about here?
Like, the wolves, every landscape, like, all of the, like the cat, like, the castle, the tower, the fire, like, all of that, I felt like looked not real, not, it looked cheap to me. And I thought that the sets all had a like cartoonish quality to them,
but that's like a design element, which, that's like very very
that is the choice, but
gothic,
but it wasn't, it's not, it wasn't giving like cool, it wasn't doing like that like a Tim Burton kind of thing, which I feel like is, you know, like his sets are always kind of like outlandish, but in like an interesting way. This just felt to me like the castle in Snow White, or the, you know, whatever in Little Mermaid. Tell that they built like the shell of it. And then there's so much like CG things that are like outside every window. I thought this was so
Do your homework? Did you prove, like, I want to know if you actually looked into how much of this was, you know, CGI, how much of it like was the explosion? Like, I want to know if you actually looked into it past your first watch, or if you just walked out and decided that didn't, that looked cheesy and never thought of it again.
Well, it looked bad. So if they did it, if it was real and they somehow made it look that bad, then that's like, something else.
Like, but you're like talking real about wolves,
I'm like,
of course they weren't real wolves. They were eating a man's face. Okay.
Right, like
they
were being exactly. Exactly. So I'm
but
saying
they
the wolves
didn't
look
bad. Like bad wolves. Like they, it's
they
not
did.
Like watching.
They did. They looked, stop. It looks gunky. It was like VFX slop on my screen the entire time. I hated it. I was like, this is hideous.
It's crazy. And it's just like, it's crazy to me because most of the time they're just in like very clearly like real set pieces with furniture and costumes. Like, so yeah, most of the things you're citing are like pull away shots that don't last long.
Even the sets I felt like looked too like fakey.
Yeah, but that's like okay. Yeah, it's an aesthetic choice. I can see
it's an aesthetic choice. I did not like the aesthetic
maybe
choice.
Maybe what
I thought
your issue is, you're like, the ceilings are too high. This castle would be too drafty. It doesn't make any sense. Go back to the drawing.
I was not looking at the like aerodynamics of the space. I just feel like the like. And maybe this is like an aesthetic choice thing, but like the castle in Nosferatu is
yes, disgusting.
Is, yeah. Yes, and it's so grimy, and it feels like, oh, this is like, this could be an actual castle that they found someplace and they went there and they filmed on set.
But this
and
is some like romanticism. Of it is that, it's a different.
And some of that is not. But this felt like every one of these felt like a set that was constructed and not in a like it just felt cartoonish to me in a way that I did not vibe
with.
It's
about
anyways,
a man
we
who uses electricity
to move
to
on.
Reanimate bodies.
Yes, like
it doesn't exist in a real space, and there's a romantic with a capital
Look,
R.
I liked the costume.
The veneer to all this.
There were things that I liked. Like yeah. The scenes where they're like, where it's Mia Goth in her gowns and they're like on a staircase that's clearly like out front of a, you know, like a palace somewhere. Like that looks real works for me.
Okay.
It was like the sort of like the entire laboratory with the hole in the floor, like that whole set piece I did not like. And
well,
then,
it was a cistern. It was meant to gather water. Okay, sir. So it had an open.
I wasn't questioning why there was a hole in there. I just did not like the way that it looked.
But yeah, aesthetics, whatever. It is, so this stars, wow, I just blinked.
Oscar Isaac and Jacob Elordi.
Oscar Isaac as Victor Frankenstein. And the changes happen pretty quick because, one, you keep the frame story,
well, no,
which
nothing,
is to say,
nothing happens very quick in this.
This is crazy to me because you have sat through 3 hour long movies and this movie was like not remarkably
an hour and a half. This
long.
Is two and a half. Two and a half. It was two and a half
it
hours.
It was two and
That's
a half?
Long. Yes.
It was two. It was 2 hours.
It's 150 minutes.
Okay.
That is two and a half.
Well, I didn't feel like that. It didn't feel like that.
Well,
it
felt like that.
But anyways, so.
Are we sure we saw the same movie?
Yeah, well, maybe you got an early cut and then they cleaned it up. you'll have to rewatch it on Netflix and see how it compares.
No, absolutely not. Hated.
But no,
yes,
I mean,
the book happened fast.
Guillermo knows his text. He sets it up. He sets it up in the same way. You get the frame story of the sailors stuck on the ice,
yes.
Trying to find the North Pole, and they discover. Victor Frankenstein, and he tells them his life story and then eventually dies, and then Frankenstein's creature comes aboard and tells the rest of his story, and then the ship's captain is like, oh wow, that's a crazy story, anyways, let's just leave and go home. And so the bare bones of that is there, where you get this entrant where you're on the ship with him. It's a little bit more dramatic, there's a little bit more monster murdering sailors bit. But then it sets up, Victor tells his story. It cuts to Victor's, I don't know what the title card was, like Victor's experience or something.
Victor's tale.
Victor's
apparently.
Tale, yeah. And he tells his story. And that's like, his story is very different than the story you get in the novel. Instead
There's
of just
a lot
being
of
this
backstory.
Like. Well, that's what the novel is. All the novel is just men talking about themselves. Like, that's what's so frustrating.
No,
with the novel.
No. But like, I feel like there's a lot of stuff about like Victor's parents,
yeah.
And then
yeah.
his brother and the brother's new wife and the yeah. The Christoph Waltz character who's like a merchant person who's financing.
Yeah, his
like,
financier. Yeah.
Yes. The. Yeah. The Victor section of the movie, once we got to the creature stuff, I thought it picked up pace a bit. The first half, I did find a little bit,
Oscar.
I thought everybody did a good job acting in this, mm-hmm. But it just felt like it was a bit meandering, kind of, and I felt.
Hubris.
And I felt like when I was like, okay, let me think back to the book. I feel like with the book, they get onto the topic of like, okay, we got to build this person pretty quickly.
No, they do not.
And
no, they do not. I'll tell
this,
you that right now.
The book is not that long. It's
I'll tell you that
pages.
Right now.
I can read the
lot.
Whole book faster
It is
than
a
this.
Lot of Victor just... jerking himself off to his own family history. Okay,
well,
you don't get the same like
show.
Level of like my dad was abusive and I hated his guts, but you do get this whole like I grew up and everything should have been easy for me, but I was just like kind of a bummer for some reason, and then I like found out about mystical magical science and that became my whole personality. And he talks about what books he studied. He talks about going to the graveyards to like dig up bodies and see what parts he needed. There is so much before he sets that. Because this is the other thing about the book that's different than the movie. Once he makes the creature, he sees the creature and is like, whoa, bitch, you're ugly, and flees the scene. Okay. So Victor mm-hmm. gives up immediately and books it out of there and thinks he can just carry on. And so that is like the whole first half of the book is him getting ready to make the monster. And then once the monster's here, he's like, oh, yeah, I'm out. Okay, so this
right.
one, you probably get to it faster because he has a large chunk of time with Jacob Elordi once he's created.
Yes.
And the other change is the Mia Goth character, because in the book, she is a childhood friend slash maybe adopted sister. Slash first cousin, but you know how they did back then. And she has no relationship to his brother, because his brother is like a toddler at the time, I think. And so it's really, he knows he's bound to wed her sometime, but he's like off sowing his wild oats, making, you know, playing with dead bodies. Mm-hmm. And she's just waiting back at home, like being like, you good? And so in this, instead, they make it so she's engaged to his older brother, or his brother who is older in this movie, and is the daughter of this guy who comes in and is like, hey, I like what you're doing. Like, I have no ulterior motives. You got to take my word for it. I just want to fund every crazy idea you have. And so that was interesting, because she becomes this sort of like antithesis of Victor's curiosity, where Victor's like very, I am a scientist, I'm a doctor, I'm going to do this because God is not everything and I can be God. And she's like, have you ever looked at bugs before? Like, they're pretty cool. And for some reason, they like each other enough here. He likes her because she literally is his mother reincarnate. And yes, she likes him because, I don't know, he's like, takes her seriously as a thinker instead of just a pretty person. But she becomes sort of the gothic manic pixie dream girl for Victor.
Well, and Mia Goth plays both the mom and the love interest. So it really is getting very Freudian very quickly with that aspect of it.
Cute.
Yeah, I got bored, I feel like, during this first section. It was just
so annoying.
It was a lot.
You're getting your English major revoked, okay, sir? You don't deserve it anymore.
I liked the book, Frankenstein. I mean, again, have I read it since I've had my, you know, sort of cultural awakening? No. But I do remember at the time being like, oh, this is like interesting. And I felt like, of the books that you read as an English major, you know, there was more going on here and it was more fascinating. Mm. But even with the book, I thought that the section of it that I always thought was more interesting is like the monsters section, mm-hmm, rather than the Frankenstein section. So
yeah, and that's kind of, I think that's true of Guillermo too. I mean, he pivots the film to, instead of having the monster immediately abandoned and like kind of lost in the woods and killing people without meaning to, he sort of like has this moment of parenting between the two where very quickly Victor falls into the same sort of abusive, physically dominating behaviors that his father showed to him, as he tries to get this monster to be anything of interest to him, to live up to his expectations. And so he's chained up in the basement, he's beating him, he's like, can't you just say a single word? And all the monster can say is Victor. And very Helen Keller of him, by the way, because I was just thinking of that
water
Helen Keller movie. Do you ever watch that? Like,
oh, The Miracle Worker? Yes, yeah, I've seen both versions of it. Mm-hmm.
Exactly. And it's giving The Miracle Worker, he has like a week to get her to say a word before he gives up, and he's like splashing water and just being like, it's water, bitch. So that's what I was thinking of. A little shout out to Disney's The Miracle Worker.
If only there was a scene where the monster was running around the table just grabbing handfuls exactly of scrambled eggs.
Yeah, that was in the longer draft that Guillermo had to trim for making this a very short 2.5 hours. But yeah, so it where I was like, huh, what was the point of this? Is you have this like element of the financier who ends up wanting this new body he's created because he's dying from syphilis. And Frankenstein is like, nah, like that's corrupted already. Like, I'm not going to put your dirty ass brain in this body. And they fight and then he dies, which I think is made it interesting. I was like, oh, I think I know where this is going. But did you clock these changes in it? And were you like on board, or were you immediately resentful, or you just didn't remember?
I didn't like, these are the kinds of, the whole first half, like, I knew that there was more going on in it than there was in the book version, because I didn't remember lots of these pieces, but I wasn't sure, like, are these parts in the book that expanded here and they were just like maybe more boring in the book, or I just read it a long time ago so I've forgotten, versus what like is new. So I really wasn't like, oh, I don't like this plot point or that plot point, especially through the first half. Mm-hmm. I think that in my mind, the book's message is so simple and straightforward, which is like, you know, we as humans, like, I mean, it's the Prometheus myth or whatever. It's like, we mm-hmm. as humans, like, we want more power. We, you know, are sort of like desperate for fame and glory and power and whatever that it is. And then when we get it and it's not quite what we want, then we just want to be able to like go, oh, well, never mind, and throw it away and like go on with our lives. And how, like, if you have this, if you have this power, like, then you have a responsibility right. to do something with it.
It's and the Jurassic know, Park monologue. Yeah.
Right. Exactly. Mm-hmm. And so it's like Frankenstein makes this monster because he thinks it's cool and he's like a lame person. And then yes. when the monster's ugly, he's like, ew, wait, no, never mind. I actually don't want to deal with this, and runs away. And then this monster like is wreaking havoc on society. And it's not his fault necessarily, because he, you know, it, like, he didn't choose to be created. He was just created and then left alone in the world to sort of operate as he pleases. And so then he's, you know, going, trying to find Frankenstein and be like, well, you know, like, do something about this. Like, you're mm-hmm. the person who started this, like, mm-hmm. fix it. And so I was sort of confused in the first half. I was like, that was the message that I thought this was of the book. And it feels like there's a lot of other things going on here that don't necessarily like lead to that. I think that Del Toro is, yeah, there's a lot of stuff about like parents and children and raising children and that dynamic that I don't remember from the mm-hmm. book mm-hmm. being there.
Yeah.
And I felt like was sort of, I don't know. I don't want to say, like, it's definitely more complex, and I don't know if it's like a good complex or a bad complex, but it just wasn't exactly like what I was expecting. Mm-hmm. And it felt like it sort of muddied the narrative a bit in my mind when I thought like, oh, the book is so clear in what it's doing. And a message that I think like is still very, very timely, especially in the age of like AI and, you know, all of the technology that we have of like, yeah, you can't just like invent AI and then sort of be like, whoopsies. It's like, you know, you have to think about what that the implications of that are going to be in the world and how you're going to manage it. Mm-hmm. And so I thought that we would be getting something that was just more that like straightforward on the nose. And then so all of these plot lines with the guy who has syphilis and his mother and the brother and the, it's just, there was, it just felt mm-hmm. a lot, it just felt kind of cluttered to me, I guess.
Yeah.
In comparison.
Yeah, I don't think it all comes together until you're allowed to be with Victor longer, because once he creates the monster, gets sick of him, and is like, this guy, and gets jealous of this monster's connection to the girl who rebuffed him, who's not interested in choosing him, who's like, yeah. There's a lot that I think is so fascinating, like, in the little details here, but try not to get lost in it. So anyways, he decides to kill the monster and thinks he does it by blowing up this castle and thus, you know, yeah, everyone hates him for it. Like, everyone's like, oh my God, like, you just wasted all our time, money, and my uncle, who's now dead in this explosion as well. But that immediately cuts to the second chapter, which is the creature's point of view. And yes. I think, you know, obviously I have a lot more baggage here, but this is the part of the novel that did feel more heavy-handed to me, is like, okay, this guy is suddenly reading poetry. He's talking, this creature's reading poetry, talking so much. It's like Paradise Lost. Like, we get it. You're a philosopher now. And I do think that's where Mary Shelley spends a lot of her time. Like, yes, Frankenstein as a concept has become like, the discourse is so based on the how far is too far for science and like what is discovery if the cost is this high. And obviously that's a through line in the text, but there is a lot that Frankenstein's monster talks about as far as like the purpose of life and you know, and creation and obviously how that ties into child rearing and like what is your purpose if you can't have a mate and if you can't have children and you can't teach, and like he was created and abandoned and has no father and no family to speak of, and so he's always watching these families and how they operate and the struggle and the gift there. And so that becomes his whole personality, is sort of like, well, I want this too, and that's why his whole thing is like, give me a mate so I can go off and be lonely with them and you can just forget about us. And he's able to like eloquently describe this enough to Frankenstein that he's like, okay, I'll do it. But then chickens out. And so in the movie instead, you do actually get a lot more time with Frankenstein's creature, like learning. You get the whole section where he ends up at this farmhouse and he learns to read because he's watching this blind farmer teach his grandchildren. And I thought all of that was like really well done without being as obviously pretentious as the novel version, just because he can't monologue quite as much as he does in the books. Uh-huh. And Jacob Elordi in this, I think, does pretty well. And I think it's interesting to think of how the internet latches on to their like rat of the month boyfriend, and like the idea of Frankenstein's creature becoming a sex object is so funny and so quintessentially our time now that I have to laugh. But what was your feeling about the second half? You liked it more, you said?
Well, I just think that the creature is sort of a more interesting character, yeah, than Frankenstein. And I like the parts of the book where it's like him and he's trying to figure out what he's doing with his life, and you know, he's wandering around and,
what is
and,
life
and yeah that. Yeah, yeah. So I sort of like that part. The thing that I remember most from the book though is the monster killing the girl, the little right. girl, and I kept like waiting for, yeah, I was yeah. like, when is like, that gonna happen,
gonna get good.
And then it didn't. Not that I'm like, yeah, kill the girl. But it just like, I was like, oh, like that's like in my mind, that is like the pivotal yeah. scene in the book is like, oh, right. he accidentally kills this girl, mm-hmm. Because he sort of doesn't know better. And then he's has to live with this guilt.
Yeah.
And, you know, and how and what that says, you know, about like innocence and all of the other sort of like more romantic, poetic, like
but
elements
instead
that,
he
you
watches
know,
us he watches humans destroy each other.
Yes. And then we and this is where we get the wolf scene, which it's like, okay, whatever,
like,
hated
no.
that. I was like we did not need this, like why are these ugly ass wolves on my screen. then we get back to the Victor plot, and you know, there's like their confrontation, and then some people die in that yeah. in different ways, so that I think they can kind of come around to the same message without having to kill the little girl. But I don't know why that was sort of left out. Like, I don't know. I was like, is this just to try to make Jacob
well,
Elordi,
Guillermo
like, more
del Toro
sympathetic?
Said that in his mind, the book is less about fear of science and more about the human spirit and this idea of forgiveness and just like the emotional connections we owe to each other and what happens if we just listen instead of firing, you know, like if we yes. all just listen to each other, we'd be better for it. And so I think on one hand it was like, yeah, that doesn't necessarily serve the plot he wants, but I also think it was just like, in some ways, Mary Shelley was set out to write a horror novel and shoved in her philosophy around that.
Yes.
And in the book, the monster is much more, not like callous, but there is sort of a, I will destroy you. You know what? You owe me so much that I don't even owe you decency that you didn't show me. And so I think it was interesting to make him a more, you know, pure character. Like, literally mice live on him. He's so innocent and one with the planet Earth and all of this. But then he does have this sort of like cruelty in him where he's prepared to go and torture Victor for not giving him what he wants. But once Victor shows how that cruelty exists in him when he shoots Elizabeth and then tries to blame him and then accidentally kills his own brother and tries to blame him, he realizes he's not interested in that he'd rather protect the sort of Mia Goth elements of curiosity and humanity. And she's like, you know, she's fridged for him, I think, to like to realize like, yeah, okay, my lot kind of sucks and I'm gonna just focus on what I can do, which is get Victor out of this world. Let's send Victor on a wild goose chase into the Antarctic because I'm sick of him killing everyone around him. Like, this man is toxic. And I appreciated that. As number one Victor hater, I valued that. I valued that re-emphasis on how Victor is the cause and effect of his own, you know, evilness. I liked that he had, because in the book he marries Elizabeth and is like, I'm going to be murdered on my deathbed. So I'm going to be murdered on my wedding bed. Like, he's such a loser in the book. He never tells anyone he's responsible. Everyone's being blamed for these monster deaths and he takes no accountability. He gives no warning. He marries Elizabeth because it's easy for him. And then Elizabeth dies because of him. And for him here to be the one to actually shoot her, like, accidentally, sure, but he kills Elizabeth and then immediately is like, oh, it was the monster. Like, that's the audacity. Like, that's that is Victor in the book, just hyper, just more obviously bad here. But even that, Guillermo's like, but we can all still find room to listen to each other. We can also learn and grow, because Frankenstein gets to apologize to his creature on that boat in the Antarctic, and they cry together, and he says Victor one more time like a lover.
It's really a Marjorie Taylor Greene-esque story. You know, she's been terrible forever. All of a sudden, maybe she's getting better. Probably not, but you never know. Yeah. She could have, if she was on a boat at the right time with the right person, she might say something nice, you know, unclear. Yeah.
She's on a sinking ship. She might have helped sink, but
right,
at least she's acknowledging.
But she might say a nice thing to her sort of adopted son, or whatever you want to call him. I mean, I guess to sort of wrap up it just felt overstuffed to me. Like, there's just a lot going on here and it doesn't always feel streamlined. I guess if you're somebody, like, I guess we're coming into this from two very different, like, perspectives, where my perspective coming in was like, okay, the book is pretty straightforward and the book is good. So therefore, they just need to, like, sort of execute a well-done, straightforward version of the book. Where I think you're coming into it being like, I don't like this book, and so therefore, the more they can sort of like tweak and change it and add different dimensions to it,
but I also want to flag that your reading of the book is incorrect.
Okay, well, here's the thing. I did not read this book for a whole semester. I read it once. We probably talked about it for like years ago.
I'm not like, oh, this is good because it's completely different than the book and abandons it. I think it's a very good adaptation of the book. I think he understands the book and he does it well while, you know, finessing a little bit here and there. that I think adds to it, but I think still stays true to a lot of the book. Mm. And I think that, you know, a straightforward Frankenstein adaptation would probably look more like this than you want to admit.
Well, hopefully it would look prettier than this. do you feel that Mary Shelley would like this version?
Yeah. Yeah, I do. I mean, yeah, I think the Mia Goth character is interesting. It did feel a little bit like at times she was allowed to give the text something more, but at other times she existed as this object for the men to react to. Mm-hmm. And so I do wonder that, but that's Elizabeth in the book too, where she's just this victim of Victor's own hubris without even realizing the threat to her. Mm-hmm. So I think she would like this. And I think it does stand up as a good adaption. Like, I don't think this is going to like fade away as sort of a failed attempt at capturing a classic novel. I think it does a really good job, even stylistically.
Yeah, I mean, high school classes will probably have to watch it, especially after it wins
and
a
discuss
bunch of
the differences. Yeah, and Jacob Elordi, is he ugly enough to justify shooting him point blank on site?
No,
probably not.
No. Unfortunately, when you have someone who is as hot as Jacob Elordi,
it takes a lot. 11 yes, hours in the makeup chair ain't cutting it.
Didn't do it. Well, he just looks sort of like a. I mean, I think this again goes back to one like. I didn't like the sort of like aesthetics necessarily mm-hmm. of it because like, yeah, his monster is like, if you compare again him to like the Nosferatu monster, it's like they're headed in two different directions. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think, yeah, if your whole thing is like, oh, Frankenstein's this horrifying, ugly creature, it's like you can't get the hottest person and then sort of just put like a weird kind of wig on him and paint him green. Like,
but it is great. PR, it is great visuals to have short king next to
yes.
towering giant.
Yes.
And the visuals there work. And they both do a great job. And they will be in the Oscar race, I'm sorry to tell you.
Yes, I know. Oof.
But I think they are deserving of it. And you'll just have to come to accept that. Okay.
Well, yeah. I mean, I will not be watching this movie again. So this is probably the last I'll have to really engage with it. But okay, next week there's really two paths ahead of us. We can either do an episode on The Running Man, starring Glenn Powell, based
Love
on the
it.
Stephen King novel, or we can do Now You See Me, Now You Don't.
Absolutely not. Okay. Absolutely not.
Hateful. I happen to love that movie, so whatever.
No.
But okay, fine.
I didn't
fine
know Running Man was a Stephen King. Like, what is this? I've seen like so many Stephen King movies at this point this year.
Well, yeah, I mean, and always because he writes constantly, so they're constantly like, this was already a movie. Like, there's an Arnold Schwarzenegger version of this, and then they just remade it. So it's like the Stephen King novel that they already turned into something.
Love it.
But okay, well, thanks everyone for listening. Please, send us your thoughts on Frankenstein.
And, I'll read them. That won't.
And,
yeah.
Yes, and unless you say that it's ugly, if you think it's ugly, message the both of us together. And yeah, we'll be back next week. Thanks. Bye.